Meeting will come to order. And we actually have a quorum already, so Representative Howes, if you would move the minutes of March 15 and March 20.
I would move those minutes.
If there is any discussion about those two sets of minutes, if not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion carries and minutes are approved. Members, we have House File number 274 up today. Representative Junkie is the author. And Representative Junkie moves House File 274. We are waiting to hear about this bill, and you perhaps have other guests to introduce.
Madam Chair, I'm going to move as quickly as I can. I think that some of people are familiar with RFA funds. Some are less familiar. We do have people in the audience, but unless you all have just really pressing questions, or if you're giving me a really hard time, I'm not going to call them up here at all. So we'll see if we can get through it. But I do want to point out, we have Jim Boerboom here, I believe, former representative and assistant commissioner Boerboom. We have David Skillbred from the Community Banks. Is he here yet? I don't see him. John Appitz, is he here yet? All our bankers are late. And Steve Johnson, Minnesota Bankers Association. Well, they're all hovering in the hall outside my office a little bit ago. So
and then, Representative Junkie, you have other guests and then, in the audience who are
And then over here we have some, I believe the Johnsons, was it? And they are down here with Farmers Union today from the Eagle Bend and I can't remember the town. Where?
Clay County
area. But Mr. Johnson's son and then one of the young folks sitting up there, his son in particular is waiting for an RFA loan. And as the explanation goes on, you'll understand we're out of funds right now. I just want to point out there's real world people, real farmers, waiting, planning for their spring session now and spring planning, putting together their loan packages, and we're out of funds right now. So, which is the reason we're hearing this bill today. So I welcome them, and they're going to listen intently and see how this all works. So, Madam Chair and members, House File 274 is a bill for the Rural Finance Agent Authority. That's an authority housed over in the Department of Agriculture that makes loans to farmers and other folks, particularly mainly in rural Minnesota. You can read what the loans are on the bill, everything from livestock expansion to beginning farmer loans to digester loans for energy, et cetera, falls under the Rural Finance Authority. What we're asking for, members, last year interest rates started going up. This program is a program that's used in conjunction with standard lenders out there in our communities, the Community Bankers, Minnesota Association Bankers, Farm Credit Service Bankers. If interest rates are low, this program doesn't necessarily get used a lot, but as interest rates start creeping up, the interest rates on these loans are typically our rate, 4%, 4.5%. Some of them are lower interest than that, but for the most part, they're what we can get. And as interest rates go up, they take this money then along with their money, and it actually buys the interest rate down a little bit and helps the cash flows of the folks out there. So last year, interest rates creeped a little bit. The program all of a sudden was a big need for it, and the calculations were not correct in the department because, of course, we came off a bonding year last year and could have very easily put some more money in. But by about July, we ran out. And then we're out of business sign went up on the Department of Agriculture site for the RFA section. So since then, we've got a backlog of loans out there pending. We've got a lot of people inquiring. I have letters and phone calls coming into my office every week from community bankers and other banks around the state wondering where this money is and if it's going to be reinstated anytime soon as they're trying to work with their producers' portfolios out there. Now, to the bill itself, I will tell you there's different levels here, and I'm going to explain it, and hopefully this committee's wisdom will give me some advice, but certainly I'm going to try and offer some myself. If you remember the governor's recommendation, he recommended $10 million. Okay? My original bill was for $15 million when I introduced it. In my committee, my finance committee, where we first heard it before coming here, Representative Faust amended it to $50 million. Now, I'm going to go over to the Senate side. Senate side, again, started at $15 million. Yesterday in finance committee, they raised it to $25 million. Now, all this sounds confusing, so let me bring it all home. This RFA program and the bonds we are letting are different than what we're used to. These bonds, do not count against our bonding target that we have every year. They're outside of that. These are paid back. They're general obligation bonds in name, but they're a different form. And we can talk to research or staff to explain that if you would like. But the fact is, they don't count against our target. They do not take a supermajority to pass on the floor of either body, just a simple majority. And the bonds are only let by the authority as they're needed. When we first started this program, members, we put $100 million into the pot, and it lasted a number of years. What we did is really give the RFA authority to use as needed for the programs we approved as a legislative body. These come back and they're paid back mainly. They're generally 10-year bonds and they're paid off. So we don't pay the debt on them either. They're paid through the program. And in fact, I'm going to look at Mr. Boardroom here, but I believe since most of these programs have been in place over how many years? $194,000, I want to say, was the bad debt on it. I mean, it's over how many years? How many? 12. $194,000 in bad debt over 12 years. So if you divide that out, it's very, very safe money. So our rationale, if we had $13 million in the pot last year and we ran out in July, you know, putting $10 million in I don't think would get us the next bonding year. Putting $15 million in might be questionable. That's why the Senate now went to $25 million. I believe through my discussions that 30 or 35 might get us through next year, too, in a normal time. So if you were uncomfortable with 50, I don't know why we would be, but if you were uncomfortable with 50, 30 or 35 might be a number that's between these things that may get us through next year so we don't have to revisit. Obviously, we'll be tracking and seeing how it's being used, so we don't have to revisit this next year in the bonding bill.
Representative Howes has questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Junkie, when these are loans that are paid back, correct? Where does the money go when it's received by the state? Where does it go? The general fund or what entity does it go to?
Representative Howes, like any loan, it goes to pay back the loan. We don't capture any money. It's money's loaned out, someone's holding the note. If it's paid back, it goes back to the person holding the note. At the end of 10 years, the money's gone. It's not gone, it's been paid back.
Madam Chair, Representative Junkie, I guess it's not...
It's not like a cash pot we started with where we're getting... If you would put cash up front, loan it out, then it would come back and you could re-loan it. So if you had one-time cash and put it in a pot and it was paid back, you'd have that pot after 10 years again to re-loan again. But we're not doing cash, we're doing bonding. It's someone else's note, so we're paying that note off. Here comes Mr. Boardroom to correct you now. I'm getting above my pay grade.
Our assistant commissioner is coming forward.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative House. Junkie, sometimes government doesn't do things the best way. Sometimes we get complicated, but it seems to me a revolving loan fund would work wonders. You would now have money to continue on this spring, and if you came to a point where you were running short, you could come back to the state and ask for more.
And certainly, Madam Chair, Representative Howes, that was one of the things we did discuss. Should we go cash or one-time cash, or should we go bonding? And again, it's probably simply a case of management right now. Do we need that one-time cash for something else? Since this doesn't go against our bonding indebtedness, it's kind of a no-brainer at that point, too, on that end of it. Now, Mr. Boerboom's here. I'm sure I need correction on a lot of stuff.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm Jim Boerboom, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and I really do appreciate Representative Junkie's efforts in bringing this bill to your committee. Just with respect to the question that was raised by Representative Howes, actually the model that we haven't had in place since 1986 is a model that has served us, has served the Rural Finance Authority very, very well, and that is the legislature grants authorization to the Rural Finance Authority. The board makes a recommendation to the Department of Finance to sell bonds, as Representative Junkie has mentioned. Once the bonds are sold, the cash proceeds from the sale of those bonds is used to buy a participation in those loans. There are 5 loan programs that are administered by the Rural Finance Authority that are funded from the sale of bonds. The Rural Finance Authority will carry those loan participations for 10 years. And during that 10-year time, the principal and interest receipts from those loan participations is deposited into a dedicated account. And every year, December 1 of each year, the Department of Finance sweeps the money out of that account to pay back the debt service on the bonds. And so it is a program that is user financed. The mechanism is not a revolving loan account. It's a system where the legislature grants authorization, the bonds are sold, the principal and interest receipts from the loan participations is deposited to a dedicated account. The monies in that dedicated account are used to meet the debt service on the bonds. So it's an excellent model. It's a model that we've used for more than 22 years.
And again, Madam Chair and members, I think it's still important to realize, too, that the bonds are only sold as needed. And they don't sell $50 million or $30 million worth of bonds tomorrow if they get the authority. It's only as the need arises that the bonds are let over a period of time, months or years.
Representative Lanning has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Junkie, you mentioned that the bad debt here over a period of, what did you say, 12 years?
12 years, 194,000, I believe, over 12 years total.
And two questions. Number one, how is the bad debt covered? Where is it covered? By whom? And in terms of, it's 190,000 out of how big a number that's been loaned out over time?
Mr. Borba.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, over the course of the program, there's been $140 million in bond authorization that has been granted. At the present time, we have $54 or $53 million of outstanding loans at the present time. There's been $124 million that have been repaid or repaid back to meet the debt service on the bonds. To answer your question about how do we do have an administrative reserve or a loan loss reserve account, there is like 0.25% of the monies that we collect, whether it's a monthly or quarterly or annual payment, on those amortized payments, there is a small 0.25% that is set aside into a loan loss reserve. Quite honestly, the amount of money in that account right now is about $2 million. And we feel that that is an adequate amount to cover any future loan losses.
Thank you.
And Representative Solberg?
Madam Chair, and I guess former representative.
Thank you.
Norbert? Once a rep, always a rep. Huh?
That's right.
But assistant commissioner.
Always keep your time.
The governor recommended $10 million, and the Senate had introduced something for $15 million, and now it's $25 million, and I heard 50 here. And possibly even 100. Before we try to settle on a number, obviously your department has some kind of a fiscal analyst that needs to know what the real true need is out there, keeping in mind that we are in the session next year as well. And there's a reason we probably don't authorize you to do $200 million off the back so that we want to manage this money as well as those other types of money. So we have some reports of it coming back to us. Can you give me a justification of why the governor, and I would assume your department, picked the $10 million to recommend to the governor?
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, I believe the $10 million was just picked as a way to get the door opener to open for business. When you look at, though, when you look at the $10 million versus we closed last year was $13 million, it may get us through the year, a short year, if we were to reopen the program in July and then come back the next legislative session in January, February. So the truth is that we're probably going to need $15 million a year or somewhere around that amount in order to keep the program ongoing. Again, the 10 was based on the fact that we'd probably open the program in July and come right back to the legislative session next year for additional authorization. The idea that we would have an open account or just any high number out there, I think I can understand the legislative, there's risk in doing that. I think there's value in having legislative oversight on the program. And actually, it's good that we come back every other year and give an update on the progress of the program. And, so there's always this balance about what amount should it be. I think the thing that I regret about the last authorization was in 2005, and that was in the amount of $18 million. Based on our past history, that should have been adequate, but obviously that did not meet the loan demand that we had this past year.
I'm sure, just a follow-up, your loan demand floats with the interest rate, so you're basing that on the current interest rate, your demand,
right.
And if the demand, if the interest rate goes down, your demand goes down, is that correct?
Mr. Borblum?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, as an example, in 2004, we only closed $4 million in loans, and that's when the commercial interest rates were at 4 to 4.5%, and the same was true for the RFA interest rates. They were also at 4 to 4.5%. In contrast, in 2006, our interest rates were still at 4.5%, and the commercial rates went above 8%. And so that discount created tremendous incentive or value for lenders to say, let's use our program. And we had more than $6 million in applications that came in just during the month of April and May last year. And when that came in our door is when I approached the legislature 2 weeks before session closed and said, we need help because we're seeing a lot of activity, and I didn't anticipate that level of activity. And so we were looking for some additional authorization late last session, recognizing that was a difficult time to approach the legislature. So,
just another follow-up, if I may. Do you have then a blended rate? Do you buy part of the paper from the bank? So the bank is participation in that as well? Do you buy half of it or some blended rate, or do you buy the whole thing?
Mr. Borblum?
Madam Chair, Representative Silberg, we buy... let's say if you were to sell a bond today, it probably would sell at 3.7% for a 5-year bond exempt, tax exempt bond. We usually add 1 to 1.5% on top of that in order to cover cost or just to have a margin in there. So our rate would be at 5% somewhere in there, and the lender rate might be 8%. The 55% of the loan that the lender carries is at 8%, and the 45% of the loan that we carry up to a maximum of $200,000 is at our 5%. So the borrower gets the blended rate.
Madam Chair, just one other thing. I think I would ask for some kind of a formal letter from the governor's office with some kind of a recommendation for us. We have kind of a standing agreement with the governor's office and the Department of Finance that if there are major changes in such numbers that we get a formal letter from the finance with some recommendations. So if you could have the finance department work with the finance department, Commissioner Hansen, to give us some kind of a recommendation would be helpful.
Okay.
And Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I guess just kind of following up with the last question. Assistant to Boardroom, does the governor support $50 million? Is that what he has said?
Mr. Boardroom.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, I have not had a conversation with the Department of Finance or the governor's staff on any number. The conversations were when we were initiating the budget process several months ago, so I'd be happy to revisit that.
Madam Chair, just to add again, just to emphasize, I think the governor or someone working for the governor, and I'm not blaming RFA because I think their request was higher members, but it got whittled down. I think they really were looking at maybe a July start time on this after session was over, getting us then to next session, but I'm not even sure that would do it, and I don't want the we're closed sign going up again for these farm loans. You heard Mr. Boerboom talk about when the applications came in, they were April and May of last year. Same thing is going to happen this year. And that's why we're getting anxious to move this as fast as we can so that folks like are sitting in the audience have access to this capital and be ready to go this year. So what we're doing, the $10 million actually, the $15 I put in, I figured, well, we're adding 3 or 4 months at least to what the governor's request was. And then when we found out that maybe we could boost that to 25 or 30 or something and then for sure make it through, if we get to next bonding season and the normal time, it'll be actually, we're trying to get through to next July is what we're trying to do. So it's about a year and a half that we're trying to calculate, and I don't think that $10 million was that calculation, to be honest with you.
Representative Erdahl, did you have any follow-up?
No.
Representative Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Mr. Boerboom, for your leadership on this program. I know you've done it for quite a while at the Department of Agriculture, and it's an important program, and I think it's appropriate that today being FFA Day, you get to present it. I am a former FFA member myself, proudly. I'm just disappointed there were no FFA members from Minnetonka that came to visit me today. But I do have a question for probably Mr. Boerboom, and it's on the demand. Can you explain to us where your demand is coming from now in the increase in amounts, and what do you anticipate the level of demand will be and the level of increased funding you'll need available into the future?
Mr. Boerboom.
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe the just stepping back to a year ago, the demand that we had, the wave of activity that we had in April and May was primarily due to some profitability in the livestock enterprises. We had pork producers and dairy farmers that submitted applications because they were primarily waiting for some better financials opportunity, and they found that last spring, last summer, and they went ahead and made some of those improvements. Looking ahead, I would say the demand is going to be in our restructured tool loan program, largely because of a lot of farmers who had faced some financial adversity due to drought and some poor weather conditions in western Minnesota and northern Minnesota. Our concentration of loan activity has largely been in southern Minnesota because of that, because I think we have a higher concentration of livestock in that part of the state. But it's really geographically dispersed throughout the state, and because of that geographic disbursement, we've had a very good experience with our loan portfolio.
Further? Did you have any more comments, Representative Junkie? Members, we're going to be laying the bill over today just because we're still having a few discussions about it, and maybe if that advice were forthcoming, that would be helpful as well. But we thank you for coming, and thank you, Representative Junkie, for presenting.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members.
Thank you.
And now we have Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner of DNR, to talk about asset preservation and particularly the pieces of the capital investment bill that will affect their department that this committee will be dealing with. We have kind of a 2-year cycle here, so some of the issues he'll bring to us we won't deal with until next year, but we're taking advantage of this year to get some of the information on the table. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Meyer, and I think we have handouts.
Madam Chair, members, I have copies of our asset preservation reports that I thought you have. I apologize. I made copies for you, one dealing with our asset preservation summary and one with our capital improvement report. And you also have in your packet a copy of our presentation, which I'll hopefully get up on a computer here momentarily. So you should have a copy of, it'll say, DNR, Natural Resources, Capital Investments. So I'll just work off the paper copy and see if I can get the computer up and running. And then when we get those reports handed out, I can touch base just real quickly on what we've spent and what we do own and things like that as far as assets.
Did you need assistance with the computer?
I need a page or something to turn on the screen.
I think it just went to sleep on me, so.
Just touch the sleep then.
Well, that's coming up, and I'm sure I'll work off the paper copy here. You can see our presentation overview. It's 2007 capital budget update. I want to just give you some context about what our requests have been historically. We typically have the same kind of requests. The numbers are different. The needs are different. But we focus them on in the titles of our areas of health and safety, forests, fish and wildlife habitat, outdoor recreation, and asset and trust fund land management. Slide 3 just is a diagram or a picture of our strategic conservation agenda that we have. This is a report where we track the critical trends and outcomes that we face every year and kind of give us some measurable results that we do. It's updated annually. We'll have a new report out March of 2007, which we'll be able to get members. Give you the link or a CD or a hard copy report if you wish. Slide 4, the area of health and safety. This funding request focuses on health, flood hazard mitigation grants, and dam repair, reconstruction, and removal. In the area of dam safety, you can see our conservation agenda, one of our tracking is health and safety and a vision for the future, dealing with flood damage, reducing flood damage through the protection of healthy watersheds, removal of flood-prone buildings. FY05 had received $27 million for these grants, and last bonding year, bonded FY06, we received $25 million. These funds are passed directly through to local units of government to do the work that's needed to build dikes, levees, remove structures from the floodplain. You'll see on the slide there, Title Flood Hazard Mitigation Grants, the cost-sharing grants reduce or eliminate flood damage. And in there's a picture of Oslo, Minnesota, and during the Red River flood of 97, the damage exceeded $1.5 billion. So the requests that we have are quite large, but they do have a huge benefit as for the cost of mitigation in the long term. Let me just do this here real quick. Moving on to dam repair, reconstruction, and removal. FY05, we received $2 million. FY06, $2.25 million. There's over 800 public dams in the state. Most are over 50 years old, requiring ongoing and emergency repairs. $2 million of these funds went directly for the New London Dam to do the work there, and $250,000 went to another project. All right, now we're up and running. Let me just get caught up here really quick. You can see here's an example of the New London Dam. The yellow area outlines the area that the dam did protect. High Hazard Dam was built in 1866. It was the number one dam on our flood safety project priority list. You can see that the yellow area, if the dam failed, the area inside the yellow line would be flooded up to 12 feet. So these are the types of things that we're out there and trying to repair and protect. The next section of the presentation focuses on forestry and forests of our state. Commissioner Holston was in front of you recently to talk about the forest legacy issue and the rapidly changing ownership that we're facing with the TIMOs, or Timber Investment Management Organizations. I'm sure you've all seen or see signs of land auctions of our forested land. I know Representative Solberg, this is an issue that's very prominent in his district. I think I'm going the wrong way. You can see that in our conservation agenda, we just discussed the vision for the future, substantially protected forests, healthy and resilient forests made up of multi-classes of trees. And we need to manage it for the diversity of benefits, ecological, economic, and recreational. You can see the total wages paid through forest industry employees in the state's $1.7 billion. So it is a huge economic driver in the forested regions of our state. Here's just a map of the lands that we're looking to protect, the private non-industrial lands and corporate lands. The red lands in northern Coochiching, Itasca County there, our lands that Boise Cascade has recently put up for sale. And this is just an example of our dispersed land ownership patterns throughout the state, which really causes problems for management, large-scale management on these forested lands. It creates access problems, management problems, and also as the lands are divided, it creates development problems for the cities, because as people buy their 40s, 60s, 80s of private forests, then their infrastructure costs, there's police, water, ambulance services, school costs that need to go along with it, so there are increased costs out there. The forest legacy issue is huge. We will be coming back with another proposal next bonding cycle, next year, for more dollars for forest legacy. There's also $2 million in the LCCMR bill. We asked for $10 million last year. We received $7 million of it. I'm happy to announce that this year, by the end of this quarter, by the end of March, we should be closing the largest conservation easement deal in the history of the state of Minnesota. Working with our stakeholder groups and Forest Capital Partners, we'll be securing a conservation easement on over 50,000 acres of land. The problem is that there's a lot of this land out there that we need to try to protect. So the acreage that are out there is hundreds and thousands of acres that we need to try to preserve or maintain in large tract industrial forest management. So we talked about that before, but I just want to make sure you're aware of that. Another bonding present or bonding component that we've asked for in the past two bonding bills, state land reforestation. FY05, we were able to secure $2 million, and last year in the bonding bill, $4 million. These funds are used to directly replant or reforest our state lands that are out there, and we also work with counties to do grants with them, matching grants, to help them get the trees replanted. Trees are a true renewable resource for the state of Minnesota, not only on state lands, on county lands, and all lands that are owned. The reforestation dollars allow us the ability to renew those resources at a faster rate. Regeneration occurs naturally, but at a slower rate. We need to do manual regeneration on a lot of sites as well. This covers also the working of the lands to make them more productive as well. Site preparation, you can see, in FY06 was about 4,000 acres, and FY07 an additional 3,500 acres there. County land reforestation, I spoke of that. We received some funds in FY05 for $1 million. Counties have spent approximately $850,000 of that, Beltrami, Cass, Hubbard, and St. Louis counties. You can see also Becker, Carlton, Clearwater counties are under contract for site prep and planting this spring still. State Forest Land Acquisition, working to acquire more lands in our forest outholdings, or I should say inholdings within the state forest boundaries, so we can secure up tracts, critical tracts needed for management and maintenance of our forest. They also promote public access, public safety related to wildfire suppression, and help us to increase our forest management activities. Forest roads and bridges, we were able to secure some funding in the past two bonding bills to help us maintain our more than 2,000 miles of forest roads within the forest system that provide us access to the timber sales, but also are the main thoroughfares within the forested areas of the state for people to get out and camp, hunt, watch nature, things of those areas. We need to continue them just like any road surface needs to be maintained. Replacing culverts and bridges were needed, and just make sure they're in a safe operating surface. Moving on to fish and wildlife. In the past two bonding bills, we've been very successful in achieving huge habitat needs and getting funding for wildlife management areas, rim critical habitat, native prairie, and other programs. I'm just going to walk through those.
Representative Hansen has a question before you go.
Thank
on.
You.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Meyer, and maybe you'll talk about this as you go through the fish and wildlife habitat, but in the other many overviews that we've gone through, Mr. Meyer, we've talked about invasive species, and there's been discussion about the various varieties of Asian carp that are moving up through the Mississippi River. And I believe you're aware, I talked with some of your staff about what's needed. We've talked about this issue for 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years, and the fish seem to keep moving north. So this year we have an emergency budget or bonding year. Just wondering if you have any update, and maybe you'll go through this, on what it would cost to build a fish barrier on the Mississippi, what discussions or plans we're at now looking at, and if there's a need for maybe some action this year on design or whatever.
Meyer.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, thank you for the question. Currently, we have been working for the past 3 years with our Congress folks out in Washington, D.C. to try to secure funding for an acoustic bubbler, we call it. It's a fish barrier made up of sound and bubbles to reduce the ability for these Asian carp. There's silverhead, big carp, and grass carp, but the Asian carp are the ones that will fly out of the water because of motor sounds that aggravate them, and the risk that is out there is they'll hit people, jump in people's boats, attack water skiers, people on jet skis, people fishing. It is really a safety issue out there. We're currently in the progress of working with our D.C. staff, and the commissioner will be going out there in a couple weeks to testify, hopefully, for about $4 million of federal dollars to put an acoustic bubbler at, right now, Dock Lock and Dam 11. 2 years ago, we were seeking funds for two of these acoustic bubblers at Lock and Dam 14 and Lock and Dam 11, but they've already moved past 14. So we've lost the ability to put two of them up. We're seeking funding for one now. It's approximately at the Dubuque, Iowa, is where we're looking to locate this structure. If we aren't successful at that, we need to come back and try to examine how do you do that, where would you do it. The challenge is it would need to be on the Mississippi somewhere on our state borders, but it's kind of a multi-state jurisdictional effort. The last ditch effort that we have would be to secure the dam at St. Anthony Falls, rebuild it, and stop the barge traffic from going north of there. That's kind of our last ditch effort. We don't want to get there. But if we aren't successful with obtaining some resources through the Water Resource Development Act, we're going to have to come back and try to figure out what to do.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if we wait, the fallback is St. Anthony Falls, then the Minnesota River watershed is gone. So my concern is if we're waiting for the federal government to act, we may talk about this for two or three more years, and there are certain things that are under our control. I mean, we could look at public land that's within St. Paul or Minneapolis, or try to build something before the confluence, because it seems to me a million or two or $3 million versus loss of the fishery, loss of tourism throughout the Mississippi or Minnesota watersheds, the cost benefit seems to be we need to act.
Do we have a plan B, Mr. Meyer?
Madam Chair, we have several options we're working on right now. The first is trying to secure the federal funding. We'd be happy to work with Representative Hansen and the committee to come up with some other alternatives to present for a bonding bill next year and keep the committee appraised of the activities that are ongoing right now.
Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Moving on to fish and wildlife, you can see the fish and wildlife vision for the future is to keep and maintain and improve great fishing, hunting, and wildlife viewing opportunities, stable, healthy fish and wildlife populations, and high-quality habitat, and to maintain our strong conservationship partners and strong stewardship ethic in Minnesota. In the past, we've had a Citizens Advisory Committee that has met. They've recommended that the state have an overall goal of over 700,000 acres of additional wildlife management area lands in the next 50 years, and on this slide just shows some of our stakeholders there. Pheasants Forever, Ducks Unlimited, Deer Hunters Association, Nature Conservancy, Minnesota Waterfowl Association, and others. We were very successful the past two bonding bills to receive $12.6 million in fiscal year 05 and $14 million in fiscal year 06, which is more than double what we've received historically total in the past for this program. All of these funds will be expended by the time we get into the next bonding cycle, so we are anticipating coming back looking for an increased acquisition again. What we're trying to do with these dollars is use them the best we can as proactively as possible with other programs, CREP, other federal programs, private land conservation programs, to create large 4 to 9 mile complexes. We titled it our Working Lands Initiative. I know some of you may have heard of it in other committees as well. You can see here we talk about our acquisition target. This is the old slide from a previous presentation of 6,000 to 7,000 acres in 2006. And the challenge with all of our land acquisition programs are the rising real estate costs that we face, as you know and are well aware of. Just some of the accomplishments. You can see with the 05 bonding bill, we purchased 14 tracts totaling 3,400 acres, I should say. 06 bonding, right now we have $1.29 million encumbered, and we're currently negotiating another 11 tracts for $6.4 million, and we hope to be coming back to you next year as we're talking about the bonding bill and letting you know exactly what we've purchased and how many acres that has led us to accomplish or secure for habitat.
Representative Wagenius?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm assuming when you talk about purchase, this is you're purchasing this outright in fee.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, yes, fee title acquisition. All of our wildlife management areas are fee title acquisition lands that we then go ahead. There's minimal development costs, a parking lot, a restroom facility perhaps, signage, of course. So all of the programs within Fish, if there's a conservation easement program, I'll make sure I highlight that for you. So otherwise, everything I talk about will be fee title acquisition. Thank you. The rim
Rukavina has a question.
Mr. Meyer, you know, the you're talking about purchasing all this land and that, and I have to commend the new assistant commissioner or whatever he is of land and minerals, but because I believe he's worked something out on getting all the school trust lands out of state parks, but my understanding is there's still a considerable amount of land in scientific and natural areas, and you know, I'm just wondering, does the DNR ever feel, I mean, you're supposedly in charge and you're supposed to have a fiduciary responsibility to generate money off those lands, and you haven't for years, and do you feel a little guilty when you come here and you ask for more money to buy new land and acquisition land before you carry through on what you're constitutionally and statutorily supposed to be doing for the school children in this state?
That's an easy question, Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, thank you for the compliment for Director Vanis with our Lands and Minerals Division. He is, and we are, Commissioner Holston and the whole DNR is very well aware of our fiduciary responsibility to the trust. The end of March, the next public or school trust land subcommittee, the exchanges will be done and complete, getting all the trust land out of our park system. We hope to then focus our attention on the same thing for the SNAs and other areas of the state where we do have school trust land and working on swaps and transfers to make sure we can be raising money off of that. It's a huge issue, Representative Rukavina, one we're well aware of and trying to control and get our arms around. But as I say often, I can't deal with the past, but I try to correct the future. So we're working very hard to take care of some of those issues and maintain our fiduciary responsibility to the trust.
Mr. Myers and members, this issue has been around, Madam Chair, since the 1970s, and it's been a sensitive issue to a lot of us in northern Minnesota when we had to go through metal detectors and that when we had, you know, auctions back in the late 80s. And it's 2007, and you haven't wrapped your arms around it. The last session, for the first time in the history of the state, money from the mineral sales on permanent school fund and permanent university lands went to the DNR. And the timber sales continue to go more towards running your forestry division and other places, fire protection, management, administrative costs, then go to the school kids. Yet you come here and you can't, and on forest lands and some of your other lands, I don't really think they're being, you know, managed to full productivity, and yet you don't have the personnel. Representative Wagenius, you made the point the other day, we have one person in an easement, one person in the DNR that oversees easements. And so we rely on the Nature Conservancy and the Land for Public Trust to be our intermediary. We don't even know how much money they're getting as an intermediary. And yet you come here and you've got millions and millions and millions of dollars in requests for wildlife areas and land acquisition and leases and easements, and you can't handle what you're doing now.
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, these aren't requests. I'm just providing a historical background of the funds we've received from the legislature through the bonding process. Last year in the 06 capital budget recommendations, we did have $1 million for buying out trust fund land that the governor had recommended. Unfortunately, the legislature did not appropriate us those funds to do some of that work. So it is something we need your assistance with, and I look forward to working with Representative Rukavina and the Capital Investment Committee to try to get us more money to try to do those activities in the future.
Mr. Meyer, how much...
Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How much did you have in last year's bonding request for acquisition of other land in Easton?
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, looking at what we had, wildlife management area request, governor's request is $15 million. That is not school trust land. It's fee title land. I'm just looking at a list that I have. I don't have a total here.
Madam Chair, my point is exactly, remember, you had a $1 million request for solving a problem that you know is there, that you just said a few moments ago that you know you have a fiduciary and constitutional responsibility to raise money off of, and you have a $15 million request in one area alone. To me, that isn't really a sincere effort, as far as I'm concerned, because I've been harping about this for years, and I just really wish you folks would get serious on it. Members in other states, that the Department of Natural Resources does not handle school trust or Permian University fund land because of the confusion between what their role is. And I have introduced bills, or expected to introduce bills, to have the Department of Administration, like other states do, manage these lands. But I keep getting reassured that something's going to happen. But $1 million to solve a problem that's been around for years versus the tens of millions of dollars to acquire new land that you can't take care of the lands you already have seems to me to not be a responsible approach. So, I hope you can do a little better job. I hate to pick on you. I wish former Representative Holston were here because he agreed with me on this issue. And by the way, I'm very proud of Representative Holston's loyalty. I see his former L.A. is here now and working for him. Kathy, we're glad to have you here. You tell the commissioner he's okay in that regard.
Representative Carlson.
Chair, a follow-up to some of what Representative Rukavina is asking about. I, for many years, served on the committee that provided oversight for the school trust lands. In fact, we served together for a while. And this is a continuing problem that he's identified in terms of what our return is. And our committee, which is made up of legislators and school superintendents and so on, continually ask what we could do to get a better return on our investment for the school kids on our land. And I would like to know if somebody in the department could provide us with some information on what that return has been. In fact, I think Representative Rukavina used to make a good point, and you correct me if I'm wrong, about the cost of maintaining public lands by the counties as compared to what it was costing us with the Department of Natural Resources. Or at least somebody on the committee raised that question. I think the counties were quite a bit less. Maybe Representative Rukavina can correct me if I'm wrong. But at least at this point, I'd like to see what's happened. It's been about 8 years for some reason. I'm not sure why. It's been like 3 years since I've been serving on that oversight commission. I think something happened.
Madam Chair, members, we can get that information to you.
But some of us are back to board now and raising these kinds of questions, I guess. So.
I know on the minerals side of things, last year, I believe, off the minerals-related activities, we put more than $20 million into the trust fund. So I don't have those numbers off of the forested lands. But on the mineral side of things, it has been very high. And Representative Rukavina, you'll be happy to know the governor's budget does repeal the minerals management account. So we will not be looking for that. We'll be looking for the general fund appropriation for minerals management in the future.
Madam Chair.
Well, I've got your representative leader after Carlson. We can go back to you.
Just wanted to.
We'll finish with Representative Carlson.
Request, then you'll be able to provide some information about how that return. And I'm asking mainly about the timberlands, but if you've got the information on the minerals as well, I would appreciate that.
Yes.
And Representative Leader, do you mind if Representative Covina goes first? Okay.
Just to that point, Mr. Myers, you kind of fudge the truth a little bit here, because you are requesting in the second year of the biennium that the minerals dropped off, but not the first year of the biennium. The law that was passed is sunsetted this biennium on June 30th, but your request in the governor's budget to capture one more year of minerals, which they've never ever done, and then drop off the second year of the biennium. And also, we brought in $20 million. You're right, we would have brought in 22 or 23. That's the part we forgot to tell the committee. And we, in the last 120 some years of statehood, we brought in 23 million dollars, and it wouldn't have been 20 million. So there has been a lot of abuse, members of this system, and Representative Carlson knows it, and I brought it up. Now, I tried to get a handle on it, members. I've had three or four different commissioners and assistant commissioners into my office and asked them to explain to me why there's charges for management, administration, fire control, things I don't even understand that are there. And then last year, no one could explain to me why we were paying the parts. There was a charge being taken out of the park for the parts. And I don't know why we should be charged the school trust for park plants that weren't generating any money, and then you double charge them. So, no, I'm sorry, members. I really wish that our Chair Dryling and the others would take this a little more seriously than it's been taken.
And Representative Wagenius, we'll have to see which of these issues we pass off to you for you to follow up on as opposed to us, so we can talk about that. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if this is the appropriate time, but I scan this, and I think perhaps this is time to bring something up. We're talking about some of their expenditures. Mr. Meyer, I represent an area which the department owes just one terrific amount of taxes for ditch taxes and some other managed areas, and they've had the real trouble. I think it's up to 20 years, my understanding. I might be a little confused on it, but I frankly have been in discussions with the department, and we can't get any answers. And some of this has been on the books for 20 years, ditch taxes, and I think it's a matter of, I might have the wrong number, but about $400,000. Can you enlighten me who I should speak with, or maybe you can tell me something about it? Because we can't get any answers, and frankly, the county boards are driving. We're having some problems because we can't get any answers, is what I'm well to.
Madam Chair, maybe I should turn this off and we can just talk about DNR budget issues for a while.
Yeah.
What Representative Leader is speaking of are the CONCON ditch payments. What we've been telling the counties is once there's been a redetermination of benefits on those ditches and it's been assessed, then we would talk about the payments of those. I know we had a meeting today on this exact issue. We're working on that. The CONCON, Consolidated Conservation Lands, ever since they've been transferred to the department about 10, 15 years ago, have been an issue. The drainage assessments have been an issue. Once those redetermination of benefits have been determined, then we'll work on some payments. But it's an issue that we're trying to figure out. What the benefits of that drainage is for draining the wetlands that are up there, the peatlands that are up there. It's a huge issue that is just not as simple as just paying a check to. It's one I'd love to meet with you on and talk to you directly about more. I could be here the rest of the afternoon talking about this.
If you would please,
issue.
And then Representative Wagenius, again, we might pass off the issue to you, I think, in terms of follow-up.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't expect, I just wanted to alert them, and I appreciate that.
Great.
Thank you.
So, please continue.
All right. The reinvested Minnesota critical habitat match, you can see fiscal year 05, we received $2 million to help us to deal with the matching dollars we receive on the license plates. So it's a matching program for habitat requiring and developing critical fish, wildlife, native plant habitat. native prairie bank easements. This is one we spent a considerable amount of time talking in the Environment Finance Committee recently about the native prairies, the easements and developments, and the pressures we're facing losing our native prairies. Even though we received $2 million and $1 million each of the last two bonding bills, it doesn't get us anywhere near we need to be to protect and preserve the native prairie that's out there. Even with the long-term goal or 10-year target to enroll 10 to 25,000 acres in prairie bank easements, we still have many, many more needs that are out there. Fisheries acquisition and improvement, FY05, $1 million, and FY06, $2 million. These are to put aquatic management area conservation easements on the critical parts of our fisheries, our shorelands that are being developed, rapidly developed, to preserve and maintain that habitat for the fish and also water quality. Madam Chair, Representative Guinness, these are either fee title or permanent easements that we acquire on the shorelines. Just an example here really quickly. You can see the green. This shows a 234-acre AMA that we acquired through a partnership including the Cuyuna Scouting Community, Brainerd Chapter of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, and a private donation. This is the Cuyuna Boy Scout Camp. It was a really unique opportunity where we were able to go in there, secure an easement, secure the land, and also maintain the use, the historical use of the camp for Boy Scouts and other youth activities that are available up there. You can see our proposed project here is to continue that and obtain an additional 125 acres and 3,300 feet of shoreline. This slide just talks about our fisheries acquisition and improvement programs, protecting critical habitat shoreline. And I'm not going to go through all of these slides in detail. You can have them for historical context or reference, Madam Chair. Waterfall habitat structures, we received $1 million last biennium. We do have some rider language in the bill, Governor's bonding bill this year, to just deal with the appropriation language. The language that passed last session only allows them to be spent on wildlife management areas. We need to allow the expenditure to be used on other waterfall production areas and areas where we need to control the water for wild rice and waterfall production. You see, this just talks about that rider language. You'll see fish hatcheries improvement. We've actually received in the past two bonding bills money to improve our fish hatchery facilities throughout the state. We raise fish in these hatcheries for stocking and also purchase fish from private vendors for our stocking activities. Stream protection and restoration, $500,000 in 05 and $2 million in 06 to do stream restoration projects. You can see the top side on the Palm de Terry River in Appleton, how we've straightened it out from the top to the bottom to protect, reduce the erosion, improve the water quality, and also the habitat that's there. SNA acquisition in 05, we received $300,000, 06, $2 million for scientific and natural area protection. The purpose of these areas are to protect high priority plant, animal, and natural community resources throughout the state. Metro Greenways is a program we have that we fund through bonding and other sources, working with our stakeholders to preserve and protect the critical areas within the metropolitan area. You can see we received $500,000 in 05 and 06. We're working directly with communities and other non-government organizations to protect areas within the metropolitan area. The money that we received the last biennium be allocated to 9 projects protecting 620 acres of high-quality natural areas and leverage an additional $5 million. We use some of these funds to leverage local communities who pass referendums that you've seen in the past to help us gain more for our dollar. Moving on to outdoor recreation.
Mr. Meyer, do you work collaboratively with the Metropolitan Council on that also, because they have a fairly aggressive identification of lands on the fringe, and I would hope that we're coordinating vision and effort there between your department and the Metropolitan Council.
Madam Chair, our central region works with Met Council, also all local units of government. We just did a big research project with the Meritus Corporation, identifying the critical areas in the what basically is turning into the 11 county metropolitan area, focusing on 7 counties on where these critical habitats are that haven't been encroached on or that we should be focusing our protection efforts on. So thank you.
Outdoor recreation, state parks, a big part of this, water access, Lake Superior safe harbors, our canoe and boating routes. You can see our vision for the future to sustain a high quality and diverse outdoor recreation system. Lands and waters remain healthy and make sure that the public of all abilities, backgrounds, and interests have a satisfying and safe outdoor recreation experience. We have over 8 million annual visitors to our state parks. 86% day users, 14% are overnight guests. State park building, rehab, and construction, you'll see on the asset preservation list that we've handed out, we do have a substantial number of buildings. We have over $378 million worth of structures within the state that the Department of Natural Resources owns, and it's a huge job to maintain and keep those all in some working order. Just in the park system, 1,600 buildings, 619 on its national register. 9 projects for building rehab or development are completed and underway. In addition to the rehab, we do face new demanding needs. Last year, there was funds appropriated in the bonding bill for a visitor at the Grand Portage park area. Also, I know there's a bill that will be heard in here for a big Bog State Recreation Area. So we have a lot of demand for facilities, but we also have a lot of internal demand to maintain and operate what we have as well. This slide just talks about our infrastructure rehab and restoration. $3 million last year to take care of bridges, aging or failing septic systems if they need to be replaced. The infrastructure that's there, Old Mill Campground Bridge reconstruction, the Fort Ridgely Golf Course rehab, Prairie and Pine Forest restoration, taking care of not only the infrastructure, but the natural resources infrastructure that we have as well within the park system. Approximately $2.5 million of improvement projects are planned for 07 and 08 out of these funds.
Representative Singelstad has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Meyer, you mentioned about the failing septic systems. So where are you with improving those? I mean, are there additional needs to correct those failing septic systems?
Madam Chair, members, I shouldn't have said failing. Systems that need to be upgraded, perhaps, is the more appropriate term. We're working at the best that we can to do that, trying to see where the list that we have. Other infrastructure work underway, wastewater treatment system upgrades at Father Hennepin Park was our next priority. So we're making sure that those are our highest priorities within restoration and rehabilitation, the environmental protection and safety pieces that we need to do. And then kind of working our way down from there. But maintaining our infrastructure is a critical need. The systems that we have in our parks, as you can imagine, for those of you who are on septic systems, the influx of people using those during high demand times, we have to maintain them and make sure that they're operating in peak efficiency, pumping them, making sure that the drainage and everything is there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Myers, so just to follow up then. So through the DNR, we don't have any straight pipe systems that are adding to the pollution in our state. Is that correct?
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, Representative Singleton. Yes, that is correct.
Thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
No, that my question was asked and answered, although I'm sure there's more to that particular comment that he made or slip that he made than we're going to find out today.
Please continue.
Madam Chair, thank you. Moving on, State Park Recreation Area Acquisition. Fiscal year 05, $2.5 million, 06, $3 million. You can see approximately $2.4 was spent by the park system in 05 and 06 to acquire 700 acres in 9 different parks. These are high-priority parcels in holdings that we either purchase because, well, we purchase only from willing sellers, and as these properties come up, we try to make sure that we're consolidating our lands and our parks, as you can be aware. Somebody who lives or owns property within a state park has their own state park, basically, to live inside of. There's no encroachment. There'll be no development ever in there. And dealing with these in-holding issues is a high priority for us, making sure that we don't have people who are trying to remove those barriers within our state parks is our number one priority with state park land acquisition. Approximately 2.6 in land acquisitions are planned for 07 and 08 out of the existing appropriations. State park camper cabins, this is a huge success that we were able to have last year. $2 million to help us improve and maintain, actually not to maintain, improve our state park camper cabin system. In the slide here, There's a picture of it. It's a one-room cabin, basically, that sleeps 2 to 4 people. There's a heater in there, a light, no stove or cooking equipment or anything. There's a picnic table, and the screen porch might be a picnic table. We rent out these. They're high demand. They're rented out almost year-round in many cases.
This was not without controversy last year.
No, it still isn't, but we're working through it, Madam Chair. What we're looking to do is increase the network that we have of 35 to add an additional 75 throughout the state. As our populations and our customers get older, more diverse, many people have young children. Sleeping in tents is not exactly what they want to do, and we try to provide unique opportunities in our state parks for these types of experiences. These were funded general fund, general obligation bond funding last year, so one of the controversies we had was we came in trying to do it with user financing. The legislature determined it should be general fund, so now we do have a new source of revenue that we'll be able to use for our park system needs as these become online and those funds do go into the natural resources account. Water acquisition, development, and fishing piers. We received $2,000,005 and $3,000,006. The state has about 850,000 licensed boats, and we have over 1,500 boat access sites. Boating needs are huge. The boats are getting bigger, bigger motors. They need a different type of boat ramp. They're causing damage at our boat ramps because of power loading, they call it, driving right up on a trailer, creating big holes in the boat accesses. We also have over 300 fishing piers and shore fishing sites. These funds are used primarily two-thirds for the fishing water access development, I should say, and then one-third for fishing pier development. Lake Superior Safe Harbor, this is a program we're continuing to improve on. $2 million in FY05 and $3 million in 06, working with large appropriations from the Federal Army Corps of Engineers through D.C. appropriations, making sure that there's a match there. We need to work with our Congress people to make sure that those matches continue, those funds are available. Current project sites, you can see Two Harbors, McQuaid. And also 2 years ago, there was language requiring us to build a new water access site on Horseshoe Bay. So that will be, we'll be working on that this spring as well.
Representative Carlson.
Just a little slow. I was back from one of your other slides and asking a question. The camper cabins, you're asking, am I reading this correctly? You're asking for 2,028 camper cabins?
This was last year's,
year's, but was it 2 million for 28 camper cabins?
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, it was 2 million for 75 new cabins. The approximate cost is about $25,000 or so per cabin, including the pad and everything. We're working to work with MinCorps, MCC, the Minnesota Conservation Corps, to make sure that these are built in the most efficient way possible. We're also working with the local building trades groups, making sure that they're being able to contribute and help us wherever possible as well. So taking advantage of all of our resources that are out there.
Otherwise, Representative Carlson was wondering why you couldn't manage electricity, too, if it was 28.
Some of them do have electricity, Madam Chair. It all depends on what the site has and what's available.
Okay. Please continue.
Thank you very much. I was on the Safe Harbor slide talking about the projects that we have. These provide access and also safety for people who are out on Lake Superior in case a storm does come up, making sure they have adequate places to kind of duck and hide out of the weather. Canoe and boating routes, you can see in fiscal year 05, we received $300,000. Red River of the North, and to do 28 designated canoe routes, representing over 3,400 miles of water trails. This is an area of continued interest within the legislature and with members that do have nice areas of rivers they'd like to designate. There are costs that go along with it, signs, maintenance, kind of campsite development things, so it doesn't come without an expense. Motorized recreation, we've been very successful in the past 2 years to receive over about $18 million worth of bonding requests for trails, non-motorized trails. We received $8 million in 05 and $10.8 million in 08. We requested acquisition or rehab and repair dollars in both years. However, we did not receive any rehab dollars until last fiscal year, $2 million. You can see this slide is one we talked about in the finance committee as well. As we receive more funding for acquisition, we receive less money to do the development and planning and the work on these actual trails. So if you follow the trends, it's only a matter of time before we have no money to do our work, but we know that won't take place. You can see here the trail system that we have out there. These are all state trails, high-quality attractions, year-round use, do have huge tourism and economic benefits as well. The challenge that we have is out of those funds, 18.8, we only received $2 million directed toward rehabilitation projects, crack repairs, future maintenance costs to extend the life of the paved surfaces. You can see the slide on, it would be your right. Those are some cracks, I believe, on the Willard Munger Trail that we're trying to deal with. Those types of situations occur throughout our state trail system. We need to make sure that we have adequate funds as we develop a network, that we maintain adequate funds to keep our investment in the best shape possible. So future maintenance costs, extend the life of the facilities. Our priorities based on field assessments of public safety and trail integrity. As you can imagine, a person rollerblading on that trail, if they hit that crack, it would be pretty devastating to them. Grants, we also receive funding for grants, our local initiative grants through bondings. Prairie Wetlands Environmental Learning Center, we receive some funds for that in 06. Trail connections, regional trails, county forest land grants, Metro Greenways, we talked about that. So some of the bonding dollars we do distribute through grants. So, Madam Chair, the Greenways dollars are actual grants given to those local units of government to do the acquisition work within the metropolitan area. Finally, asset and trust fund lands. We talked about buying off trust fund lands. We did not receive any funding for that, but we are taking it upon ourselves to swap out wherever we can at the fastest rate possible. It does take a substantial amount of time for real estate staff to do appraisals and making sure we're swapping out value for value as we're required to. And asset preservation, we received $2 million in 05 and in 06. The problem we had previously is we didn't receive any in 04. So we went from 02 to 05, which took us more time. It's taken us more time to get money into the system by the time we do bids and specs and get everything in line. And I talked about the buildings, 2,600 buildings across the state, $26 million in deferred asset preservation statewide. And our key objectives, as with all of our asset preservation, rehab, and repair, eliminate injury and illness, improve air quality, enhance accessibility, and the preservation of our capital investment values is critical to what we have right now. It's just like our houses are, the assets we hold in our parks and throughout all of our areas are truly the capital investments of the state. You can see putting the money to work, condition assessments, prioritize projects, bidding the contracts, and then finally getting to construction. It is a complex process, as you're well aware of. This just kind of shows our projected plans, ADA, the envelope, the exterior, interior, mechanical, actual replacement, roofing, safety, site needs, structural needs, and then rehabilitation. You can see the pie chart, how they all add up. And our challenge ahead is just catching up, investing in maintenance on an ongoing basis, making sure we're doing it as sustainably as possible. Energy, we're talking with Park staff today, how can we try to do some demonstration projects in some of our parks with solar, photovoltaic. Actually, I think it was Representative Junkie who was talking to us about that. Maybe some wind energy development projects, things of that nature. How can we use our system that we have that people are coming to learn about our environment and our natural resources as a window to what they might be able to do at home? Energy cell development, you know, if we could ever do that, show people how to do those types of things. Look into the future and what we can do with our parks to show people that we are a leader. Putting our money where our mouth is what's so important to us. Capital budget, you can see we talked about the health, safety, forests, fish and wildlife habitat, outdoor recreation, and then asset and trust fund lands. You will see similar projects coming to you next year. As we work to develop the governor's bonding proposals, we will be working with the committee and staff to get you out into the field, to show you what we have out there, what our needs are,
And anything that you would like to see, Madam Chair or members, please let us know, and we'll make sure that we get you out there and try to have a little bit of fun doing it, too. So,
And this, obviously, members, is a very big part of our bill next year, and we have actually wonderful resources on this committee for the next 2 years, members who are not only with interest but background to able to help shape that part of the budget. So now you had two handouts, but did you reference? And I thought I had just one.
One will say, it'll say Natural Resources Capital Improvement Program Report, and the other one will say Asset Preservation Summary Report. They look the same. Both have the same date on them. And they all went to the same people as well. You need to look down on the bold part to make sure you have two different ones.
So probably when they handed them out, they didn't perhaps realize there were two.
Oh,
so
sorry, Madam Chair.
We might have to...
Which one do you have?
I happen to have, it says Asset Preservation Executive Summary, and on the back it says Asset Preservation Project. Does anybody have two? Most people have just one, so we probably passed them around thinking they were the same.
I had them separate. I'm sorry, ma'am. Yeah, that probably wasn't as clear as I should have been. Does everybody have the one that says Executive Summary? It's a two-page document, a cover sheet, cover letter, and then it has some text and then some tables on the back. Half have one and half have the other.
We're blaming our committee administrator. She just took responsibility. She was trying to help out. She said, the pages are innocent.
Sorry.
I'm probably guilty as well, Madam Chair, for not getting them to you in advance. I apologize.
So, first of all, we're looking at the one that has three pages of, is that the one you want us
tabular? That one's just going to be real quick. These reports are required by statute for us to present to finance, and also the chairs of the Environment, Natural Resources, Finance Committees and the Capital Investment Committees in both the House and the Senate. This is just our capital improvement report. It lists, the report represents a list of projects funded from bond appropriations during calendar year 2006. This covers all of our programs. So it's a summary document. You can see in calendar year 06, we were able to expend $42,175,000. Throughout all of the programs we just spoke of. So I'm not, unless you'd like me to, Madam Chair, I wasn't going to spend a lot of time on that.
That's just fine.
The other one, which is a two-page document, cover letter, and then it says Asset Preservation Report Executive Summary. Again, this is required by statute, but you can see under funding summary, we received $2.6 million in asset preservation in 2002, $2 million in 05, and $2 million in 06. We use these funds in addition to operating funds to maintain our buildings in a safe and code compliant manner. Under the facility summary, just some facts. We operate and maintain 2.9 million square feet of space in the 2,600 buildings I spoke of, with a value of the buildings over $378 million, and then the deferred maintenance backlog that I just mentioned, $25 million. You can see we will not be requesting any asset preservation in 07, but we will be coming back with a request for the 08 bonding bill through the governor's bonding process. And the back page of this, Madam Chair, just shows by the type of asset preservation projects that we've spent the money on. Going back to 02, of course, we spend the oldest money first, so to speak, so we can utilize all those dollars. And then there is a little lag with the 05 and the 06 dollars because of the contractual needs. We need to do the bid letting, try to identify the work, get the contracts in place, and then the seasonal nature of our work as well. So we anticipate to have 90 to 95% of all of our asset preservation funds expended by the time we come back to you to talk about new asset preservation dollars within the next bonding cycle, Madam Chair.
Any further questions? Well, this prepares us for the two-year cycle that we're entering, and we thank you for not only the required report, but the additional background that prepares us for the challenge ahead. If there are no further questions, next we begin hearing some bills at the next meeting. Is there any further discussion? If not, meeting is adjourned.